This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Senior citizens make up a large and rapidly growing segment of Vermont's population. Combine that with the state's tight housing market and mostly rural character, and housing for seniors can be a particular challenge. Today on Vermont Edition, we're going to look at senior housing in Vermont, especially with the state's focus on getting seniors the support they need to stay at home as they get older. Many seniors want to stay at home, but others don't. Others are looking for independent living facilities or assisted living facilities, and those are in tight supply as well. We're joined now by Erhard Manke, coordinator of the Vermont Affordable Housing Coalition. Erhard, nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk to you, Jane. Thanks.
And here in the studio with me is Miranda Lascaz, a developer for Cathedral Square. That's a nonprofit that develops and operates housing communities for seniors. Miranda, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Erhard, can you start just by laying out the landscape for seniors in Vermont, what it looks like, what the options are?
Sure. Happy to do that. And maybe for listeners to understand, I would like to just talk a little bit about our affordable housing shortage, because certainly seniors are, and I would say probably disproportionately affected by that. As you mentioned, we have a pretty extreme housing shortage in most areas or many areas of the state. We have a 1% vacancy rate for rental housing. We have pricey rental housing. Two-bedroom rents on average in the state of Vermont are considerably higher than most people can afford, and there's a large gap for most lower-income folks, especially those living on fixed income, like seniors who might be living solely off of their Social Security benefits. So there's a very large gap there between what they can afford and what's available on the market. And that's speaking about rental housing. I would say there are other issues for home ownership for seniors who own their homes, and that's sort of a separate set of issues which I can address a little bit later. And I understand you have some other callers perhaps that might be able to address some of the factors that are involved there. But in addition to the 1% vacancy rate, we have a very substantial percentage of renters in the state of Vermont that are what we call cost burdened, meaning that they're paying more than 30% of their income for their shelter costs. If you're paying more than 30% of your income for shelter, you don't have enough left over for your other basic life needs. And we have 47 approximately percent of renters in the state of Vermont that are cost burdened in that way. And again, seniors that are living on Social Security would make up a good portion of that, because on Social Security, they just cannot afford the rents that are available in the prevailing market in most areas of the state without some additional assistance. And therefore, the extreme need for affordable housing, especially among seniors, and especially as the so-called silver tsunami is upon us, my generation, the baby boom generation, rapidly aging, and folks are, you know, wanting to move out of their homes. They may be empty nesters. They may be overhoused. They may be looking to the kind of affordable rental housing that Cathedral Square provides. And there are just not that many options. We're constrained by federal and state funds and the availability of resources to build affordable housing, because, after all, it's real estate and it's expensive to develop real estate. The federal government has seen cutbacks, especially in a program that used to be dedicated solely to building and supporting housing, affordable housing for seniors, the so-called HUD 202 program, which was the mainstay for producing senior housing for low-income seniors. That program has effectively stopped making funds available for new construction of senior housing as of about 4 or 5 years ago, and is now solely supporting existing 202 developments around the country with operating support and some capital needs for things like roof replacements.
Erhard, I'm going to stop you here, because you are getting into all of the meat that we're going to be discussing in today's program. So this is terrific. You're jumping right in here and talking about the challenges, and that's fantastic, because this is the point here, that there are a lot of senior citizens in Vermont. There are more to come. We're all aging all the time, but you know, when you look at Vermont, one of the oldest states in the nation, and the Vermont Department of Aging and Independent Living did some statistical modeling just a couple of years ago now, and they projected that the population aged 65 and older will significantly increase. Under one scenario, they have 65 and older more than doubling between 2010 and 2030. Mm-hmm. So, Miranda, I'd love to get you in here. Are we ready for that? I mean, given what Earhart's been telling us about some of the problems with renting and the high cost of living, lack of affordable housing, are we at all prepared for having this many older Vermonters who may be looking for other options and may be losing an income and need to have a place that's safe and secure and comfortable to live?
That's a good question. We're not ready. I mean, we're everybody's working very hard to do our part. We're building affordable housing as quickly as we can. Resources are limited. But as you mentioned, we have a aging demographic and a growing demographic and people who are really, really struggling to pay their rent.
So not just rent. I mean, we have homeowners, too, who are trying to figure something out. I think the older we get, the more likely people are to own their own homes rather than be renting still in Vermont, even though some things are shifting, you know, in the last several years. So for homeowners, this is still a problem, too, not just for renters, Miranda.
That's true. And Cathedral Square provides rental housing, so I know less about the homeownership situation. However, we do hear in communities that we work with to build new rental housing that often seniors will come to some of the service agencies and say they're really having trouble keeping up with the maintenance on their home. So some seniors certainly prefer to live in a home that they might own, and others are interested in moving to rental housing because they don't have those home maintenance needs or challenges, but also because rental housing congregate setting can provide, you know, a lot of benefits in terms of socialization, being amongst other people, being close to amenities so that they're not a long drive away if they need to go to the store, if they need to go to the doctor's office. And a lot of rental housing is now providing services to help seniors age in place.
Listeners, I want to bring you into the conversation here. Have you thought about where you're going to live in your later years? Or maybe you are in your glittering, happy twilight right now and you are thinking about this or you've made some decisions. How do you manage? We're looking at housing options for older Vermonters. We'd like to know your experience and what you think could be done to ease the challenges presented in finding safe, affordable, convenient places to live as we age. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from Emma who says, I'm going to retire soon and I want to stay here, but it's too expensive, echoing what we're hearing from our guests. And Deb says, transportation seems to be a big piece of this puzzle. Even if a senior wants to stay in their home, is able to do so, but can't or shouldn't drive, they end up very isolated. And for seniors of limited income, transportation is often only available for medical needs, as opposed to being able to get out for shopping and to battle social isolation. Any thoughts on how to address this issue that limits many seniors and makes it difficult to remain in their homes? Earhart, what do you think?
Well, you know, one of the challenges, as Miranda mentioned, is isolation, and folks may be overhoused, and increasingly as folks want to remain in place and age in place, that isolation is certainly problematic.
Let me just stop you. You both have mentioned overhoused as a term. Can you explain what that means, Earhart?
Sorry. Sure. I mean, if you're living in a traditional, you know, whether it's a ranch or an old Victorian, you've raised a family, perhaps a partner has passed on, and you're a single individual in a large home, but you're living in a community. You like your community. You're connected with your community, and you still love your home and your possessions, and are not necessarily ready to downsize and live in multifamily rental housing. Then that sort of that to me would be what I would describe as overhoused. Your house is basically more than what you need. But if you would like to remain there, you know, there are some solutions, some resources for that. Home share, we have active home sharing programs in a number of counties, both in the Northwest and in Central Vermont, that help hook up seniors and not just seniors, actually, but, you know, folks who are have additional room with others that are in search of affordable housing. And if I'm understanding correctly, you may be hearing from someone on that.
Yes, we will. We're going to talk about Home Share Vermont in a couple minutes.
So home sharing would, you know, to me, be one of the ways of addressing, you know, that isolation for seniors that are wanting to age in place in the housing that they've lived in, perhaps for many years. Also, rehabilitation may be an issue. If you're staying in the home that you've lived in for many years, you may not have had the money to do the necessary upgrades that are required for homeowners to, you know, keep their housing safe and frankly also comfortable. So rehab might be a need, dollars for making necessary repairs and improvements, and as well for weatherizing your home. Older homes, you know, we have the second oldest housing stock in the country, many of the homes are not properly weatherized or made energy efficient. So weatherization is potentially another need for seniors that are aging in place in their homes. And likewise, as they begin to have mobility needs, accessibility and accessibility modifications may be something that that a homeowner aging in place might need. And frankly, as a support for those who may not be weatherized or may have very low insufficient income to pay for their fuel needs, LIHEAP, the Federal Fuel Assistance Program that's administered by the community action agencies and by the state of Vermont, is another another need and another resource for low-income seniors that are aging in place.
What about to Deb's question about transportation, though? You know, she mentions that in many cases there are options for helping people with decreased mobility get to medical appointments. But, you know, for that question of social isolation that we've been talking about, I imagine transportation, it's a big problem for everyone in rural Vermont and perhaps a bigger problem still for senior citizens who, as they decide or are, you know, have trouble driving, may be facing even more isolation.
Well, I don't know if Miranda wants to comment. I'm not the transportation expert, but, you know, generally, I think we all recognize that transportation is a challenge in a rural state, and it certainly leads to much greater isolation in our smaller towns that may not be served by public transportation or special services transportation. Although, you know, over the last, you know, having lived in Vermont for many years, I've seen the expansion of transportation resources, but they're just not enough. Our population density does not adequately support the kinds of transportation needs that that we have. There's simply not enough resources.
Yeah, I would echo Earhart's comments and say that there, you know, I've heard anecdotes of persons who, or even towns that have kind of buddy systems, or not buddy systems, but persons who help seniors in their community get rides to other things. And, you know, it really, I think, varies from town to town, but that's certainly something that's really important for seniors to be able to stay in their homes, or just in general in communities to be able to be near public transportation or have those support services that can make sure that they're not isolated and can get to where they need to go.
Miranda, can you talk a little bit more about Cathedral Square and how it works? It is a nonprofit that works on providing affordable housing for senior citizens. So how does it operate?
Sure. So Cathedral Square is a nonprofit, and we've been serving Vermont seniors since 1977. We have about 30 rental communities, mostly in northwestern Vermont. And in those communities, we have over 1,100 residents. So our model is we provide safe, affordable, healthy homes. And in addition to providing housing, so I work in the development department, and we work hard to build new buildings, to renovate existing buildings, and to preserve existing affordable housing where there's an opportunity. Another really important piece to that housing is services. So Cathedral Square piloted a program called SASH, which stands for Support and Services at Home. And SASH is a model that's built on a partnership between the Affordable Housing Network in Vermont and community provider organizations such as area agencies on aging, home health, and designated mental health centers. And so what SASH does is it's a care management model. So what it does is there's a coordinator who is on site is closely tied to residents that can coordinate the care that those residents might need. For instance, if they're coming back from a hospital stay or a nursing home stay, make sure that all the transitions that that resident might need are in place so that they are safe and can transition safely back to home. It also provides preventative health care, health coaching, and transition support. So a lot of the preventative pieces to the SASH model include improving balance through Tai Chi or seated yoga classes. There's nutritional counseling that can really help and has been demonstrated to show a lot of reductions in chronic healthcare conditions. And then also it's really a savings, too, a healthcare dollars savings. We're saving a lot of money by having this model of care coordination. It's been shown through the last 3 years evaluation that the growth of annual Medicare expenditures was reduced between $1,700 and $2,000 per person who's involved with the SASH program. So SASH is statewide, and it's really built on those partnerships between agencies and housing sites.
I understand, though, in terms of the people who are actually living in the units that Cathedral Square has built and runs, and you said something like 1,100 units, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds wonderful, but I understand you also have a waiting list that is very, very long. I mean, it could be 3 or 4 years before somebody who's on that list gets in.
That's right. Our waiting list changes all the time. Right now, it's a little over 800 people who are on our waiting list. It generally takes between 1 and 2 years, sometimes up to 3, for a person to rise to the top of that waiting list for an available apartment. And a lot of times, people on the waiting list don't have that long to wait. So there really is a dire need to build additional affordable housing for seniors.
So do you feel like there need to be more organizations like yours? There need to be more options for these kind of communities, whether they're independent living or assisted living, for aging Vermonters? I mean, it can't just be Cathedral Square, I imagine.
Oh, I do. And we work closely with other nonprofits throughout the state, certainly, that are also working very hard to create new units of affordable housing.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Williston. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. My name is John Pierce, and I'm a volunteer with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. And I'm down here in Montpelier today at the State House, and very glad to see the topic that you've chosen, namely affordable, accessible housing. Because we're trying to find ways down here in Montpelier of giving people financial assistance who need to make modifications of their home, so that they can live safely and not be vulnerable to falls, and be able to stay in their own home and not have to go to any kind of supervised living setting. So very delighted to hear about the topic that you're covering today. And if people who have any ideas or have any further questions can call the Multiple Sclerosis Society with our offices here in Williston. Thank you.
John, thanks for your note. Appreciate that. We are talking about housing today, specifically senior housing and how there's not enough of it and what options there are for aging Vermonters. And I'd love to know if you find yourself in that situation, what you're doing, how you feel about whether you want to stay in your home or move somewhere else, and what options you see in Vermont. Is this something that troubles you? Do you feel like you have enough money to do this? And what would help? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we are looking at the housing options for Vermonters as they and we age. Whether it's moving into an independent or assisted living community or staying at home, there are challenges. Availability, cost, transportation, just to name a couple. Tell us how you think Vermont could be a better place for seniors when it comes to housing. Call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm talking today with Miranda Lascaz, a developer for a nonprofit that operates housing communities for seniors. It's called Cathedral Square. And with Erhard Monk, a coordinator of the Vermont Affordable Housing Coalition. And joining us now to discuss yet another option is Kirby Dunn, executive director of HomeShare Vermont. Kirby, nice to talk with you.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So Home Share Vermont is not just for senior citizens, but it's part of your mission to make sure that you are helping seniors stay in their homes and keep their lives and their homes affordable. Can you explain just very briefly how it helps address the situation?
Sure. Home sharing is an arrangement between two people. Someone who has a home with an extra bedroom offers to share their home with someone who's needing an affordable place to live. And that person who moves in might provide some assistance with a variety of things, depending on what people are willing to do and what people need. So the role of our organization is really one of screening, matchmaking, and ongoing support to find those people and to help them work out an arrangement that works for both of them and to make sure it works over the long term.
How many pairs do you have right now?
At any given time, there's two different programs in Vermont, and at any given time, we'll have probably about 100 matches. We call them matches going.
So you have 100 matches, and you have more people, I understand, who would like to do this, but particularly more young people who are looking for a place to live than there are people willing to share their homes at this point.
Yes, and some of this is varies regionally. In Chittenden County, in the more urban core, we'll have maybe 10 times as many people looking for housing as we'll have homes available. And the further out we get in the more rural areas, sometimes we have, the reverse of that. We might have people who want someone to move in, but it's harder to find people who live farther away from jobs and transportation, that kind of thing. So it is harder to do. But generally, we have more people looking for housing than we have homes available.
We have a couple of listeners calling in specifically about home sharing. Let's go to John calling in from Burlington. Hi, John. Go right ahead. Hi, John. You're there. Can you hear us? All right. We'll see if we can get you back. How about Noni calling in from Grand Isle? Noni, you're on the air. Can you hear me?
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Thanks for having me.
Great.
Yeah, I live in Grand Isle now, but I do also have a condo in South Burlington that I rent out. And for a time, I was living in South Burlington and renting, and that was largely how I got my income through the rentals. Unfortunately, what was happening was that when I filed my property tax, they were including the income of my tenants along with my own income, so I lost the rebate. So, it's I felt like I was being sort of, in a way, penalized or double taxed.
Mention, Kirby, please go right ahead.
There's sort of a strange, with the property tax adjustments in Vermont that are income sensitized. If anybody's sharing a home with someone, even if it's your adult children or just a roommate of any sort, the state looks at your total household income, including the income of those people living with you, to determine if you're eligible for income sensitivity. Now, we did get an adjustment to that law that says if you have a roommate because of a home sharing arrangement and a home sharing agreement through an organization like ours, then that person's income is not counted against you for property tax adjustment purposes. But if you do collect rental income from them, that rental income, of course, is counted towards your income because it is part of your income.
Okay, so Kirby, when you look at the landscape for senior citizens and for Vermonters who want to share their homes, want to stay in their homes and think this might be a good option, what kind of things do the home share partners help do for the homeowners who are aging in this case?
Yeah, I mean, it can be a variety of things. I mean, we heard about transportation earlier, and certainly driving is something that sometimes people offer, or they might help cooking a meal or grocery shopping, or it might be yard work or helping shovel the snow, or it might be someone who's just having a hard time taking care of their pets now, going out and walking them on the icy sidewalks, or changing that kitty litter box every other day. So, it's really, home sharing is about two people helping each other. And it's really up to those people to decide what they're willing to offer and what they need. So a home sharing arrangement really varies. Every one of them is different depending on what people are looking for. On average, it's about seven hours of service a week in exchange for a reduced rent. And our average rent in our program last year was about $250 a month.
So that's what the other person would pay, about $250 a month, and do these extra things around the home.
Right.
I think we have John back from Burlington. Hi, John. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, ladies. I'm glad I got a chance to call in, but I was really calling in because I've had some personal experience with HomeShare as a young adult myself, and just had a terrific experience. I think it offers both the individual that is the homeowner and the other person, you know, looking for a space to live affordably, both really a good chance to develop a new relationship, to develop a bond together. And I think, you know, as somebody who's experienced that before, it's a wonderful place or a wonderful opportunity to have an affordable place to live. You know, moving into Burlington, let's say, as a young adult, you are looking at quite substantial rents, and I just found my experience to be wonderful. It's just, as Kirby said earlier, as you get out into those rural areas, it becomes more and more difficult. And I wonder if there's any way that HomeShare Vermont is trying to expand the program, perhaps?
John, thanks for the call. Kirby?
Yeah, I mean, I think we are trying to get more and more people to consider, you know, sharing their home. And we're trying to get younger people, you know, maybe somebody's an empty nester and, you know, maybe they don't need a lot of help, but they have an extra room and they might be willing to have someone move in and pay a reduced rent in exchange for maybe helping shovel the snow or taking care of the dog when they go on vacation, something like that. So I think it is a model that we're really trying to expand to a greater population and getting more people. You know, this is Vermont, and this is a very Vermont thing. It's about neighbors helping each other. And it's really something that can help people of all ages. And what we see is, there was a recent survey by ARP. They did a survey asking people 45 and older, would you be interested in home sharing as a way to stay in your home? And a lot of people said yes. Over half of the people said yes. But as people got older, they were less likely to want to share their home. And that's in part because it gets harder to do sometimes as we get older. So we really want to encourage people to think about sharing their home when they're younger and maybe more open to it, and really focus on that relationship building and that friendship, which really does come from home sharing.
That's Kirby Dunn, Executive Director of HomeShare Vermont. Kirby, thanks for sharing a little bit about what your organization does.
Thank you.
We're talking about options for seniors today in terms of housing. We got a note from Terj who says, one piece that would be helpful for many of us, especially in more rural communities, would be helping transition from relying on wood heat to other economical sources of heating one's home. The business of stacking and moving the large amount of wood required to get through the winter gets harder as people get older and or experience health problems. Earhart, you know, we just heard from Kirby about one option for doing even something like that. If you're not getting rid of wood, at least somebody who lives with you and has younger, stronger arms might be able to do some of those chores for you. So there are, you know, there are options. What else? What else are you seeing as alternatives and things that are happening in the state to try to help this situation and ease what is clearly a really tough situation for many older Vermonters?
Well, I mean, one thing that I alluded to earlier is, you know, some folks may need, their homes may have rehab needs. And in the case that you just cited, it sounds like somebody needs a transition to a different heating system. And we do have a network of nonprofits around the state, the NeighborWorks Homeownership Center Network, They administer revolving loan funds that are funded with federal and state community development block grant dollars that make both low-interest loans and grants to income-eligible homeowners to help with their rehab needs of their homes. And one of those might be a transition to a different heating system. So moving away from wood heat as your primary source and you know, getting a different heating system. That network is really spread out around the state of Vermont. There's five affiliates, and they cover pretty much the entire state. I'm trying to remember their URL, their website address. I can't remember it offhand, but if you Google NeighborWorks Homeownership Centers of Vermont, you will get there, and they have regional offices.
Miranda, when you look ahead, and we talked about, you know, I think Earhart mentioned the silver tsunami that is fast approaching, that we're sort of at the leading edge of. What do you think needs to be done in Vermont to make sure that we do have safe, affordable, convenient, comfortable options for all of the seniors and older Vermonters?
Well, that's a good question. I think we need to continue what all the good things that we're doing now, such as HomeShare and other nonprofits building new housing units. I mean, that's really the key, is we also need additional housing units. Vermont recently commissioned the Housing Needs Assessment, and that documented the housing gap for seniors right now. For we measure income eligibility for affordable housing relative to area median income. So for households whose income is less than 50% of area median income, right now the senior housing gap is 1,921 units, so very high. And then if you include those households that have a little bit higher income but still less than 80% of area median income, it jumps up to 2,482 units. So there, we do really need to continue to fund affordable housing. We need to find additional funding sources. We need to make sure that housing for seniors has services in place so that we can make sure that seniors are able to age in place with dignity and to feel safe and secured and valued. We recently, a recent Cathedral Square resident that lives at our Thayer House property in the New North End of Burlington, said, after living here for 1 year, I feel 10 years younger. And that's the kind of thing that we really need. We need to be able to help seniors stay safe and
happy.
Happy and able to age in their own homes.
That's Miranda Lascaz, a developer for Cathedral Square, a nonprofit that develops and operates housing communities for seniors. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
And Earhart Manke is coordinator of the Vermont Affordable Housing Coalition. Earhart, thanks very much to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, it's mating season for foxes in Vermont, so you may actually be seeing and hearing a little more of them in your neighborhoods. We'll fill you in on the details and on a potential outbreak of illness in foxes that could affect your pets next on Vermont Edition. So what does the fox say? Well, you might be able to find out for yourself at this time of year if you're out and about at dawn and dusk. Red foxes in particular are often spotted around neighborhoods and scrubby agricultural areas and are more likely to be vocalizing right now. Chris Bernier is a biologist with Vermont Fish and Wildlife, and we asked him to fill us in on what's going on in the fox world.
It is breeding season. The peak breeding season in Vermont for both red and gray fox is approximately February and March. And so as we progress through March, I expect breeding activity will wane a little bit. And during the breeding season, you can expect to hear more activity. The foxes are fairly vocal, particularly the vixens, the females, during the breeding season. So people might hear them calling more often, as well as there's a lot of movement during the breeding season, so people are more likely to be seeing them. That's probably particularly true more so for red fox than the gray fox, which tend to be more in the forested environments and less in view.
You mentioned that there may be more calls that people hear. If people are unfamiliar with the vocalizations of a fox, they're very strange sounds and kind of terrifying if you don't know what you're hearing.
Yeah, they are. And I would recommend that people go online. There are a number of websites that have recorded vocalizations of both grays and red foxes, and they are hair-raising. If you're not expecting to hear something like that, I mean, people equate them to sounding like a shrill woman's scream, I've heard people refer to them at. They're very hoarse-sounding and high-pitched barks, essentially.
Now, I think I've heard them on occasion in my yard. Do foxes actually come into habitated areas or areas where there may be humans to do their mating or to cross through and maybe making these calls at this time of year?
Yeah, and I think that's probably more so true for red fox, which have really taken advantage in some respects of the human landscape, the environment that humans have altered over time. The red fox is better adapted at making use of that. So we do see them more commonly in farm fields or in the edges of your yard and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, you would see them and hear them at this time of year.
So red foxes and gray foxes don't actually occupy the same niche?
They are distributed on the landscape, and there is definitely overlap between their ranges, but generally speaking, red fox will utilize a more agricultural landscape where there is hedgerows and farm fields, abandoned farm fields. They also will utilize forested environments as well. Gray fox, on the other hand, are typically associated with deciduous forests. Not exclusively. Of course, when you talk about these things, there are no rules, right? These are just generalities of their habitat use. But again, gray fox are more forested and of that, mostly deciduous. Sometimes you'll see them in the abandoned ag field where it's reverted to a scrubby, shrubby type of environment.
And are there other differences between the species besides where they tend to spend their time and their coloration?
Sure. There are a number of differences. They are similar in size. The gray fox tends to be a little bit shorter, but it's more robust. So pound for pound, they're very similar. And as you know, they do look different. The red fox has, hence its name, a very reddish coat. But that can be grayish at times. There's quite a variety of coat colorations. But most prominently, they have a very white-tipped tail, and they have black leggings, black boots. The gray fox has, again, hence its name, a grayer coat, but it has a very distinctive black stripe down its back and a black-tipped tail. But some of the other differences between them would be, I think, most notably the ability for gray fox to climb trees, which is the only canid here in North America that can actually do that.
I had no idea they could climb trees.
Oh, yeah, they're quite good at it. In fact, they will climb up a tree, and then once they get into the branches, they can bounce from branch to branch and move about in the tree. In fact, it's been documented that gray fox will actually rear pups in tree dens up, you know, as much as 18 meters up in the tree.
No kidding.
Yes, which is probably one of the ways that they've been able to deal with coyotes, which is a relatively recent arrival to the state. They don't necessarily need to avoid the coyotes as much during the breeding season, whereas red fox will actually establish their home ranges on the periphery of coyote home ranges, particularly those that are breeding females.
So for that reason, I mean, right now you said they're mating, but once the females, the vixens, are denning up to have their kits and rear them, are we more likely to see them, at least the red foxes, because they're trying to avoid predation from coyotes?
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that, actually. There was a study done here, actually a series of studies done here in Vermont, related to the ways that the foxes, both red and gray, interact with the coyote. And again, the gray fox and the coyote tend to have more of an overlap of their home ranges. They avoid each other just by not utilizing those core areas at the same time as each other. Whereas red fox, they're actually going to be establishing themselves on the periphery of coyote ranges, which we know that coyotes tend to veer away from human habitats. And so sometimes that is where the red fox has to go to rear its young. And also keep in mind that red fox make use of some of these human habitats better than other species, and so they are better able to get the resources they need in some of these more developed landscapes or agricultural landscapes.
Now, I know some people, when they see a red fox, which, as you've pointed out, we're more likely to be seeing just because of where they are, will look at that animal and say, chicken killer and cat killer, and I don't want it anywhere near me. Are they killing chickens and cats?
Well, sure. I mean, these are carnivores, and they are opportunistic feeders. They're going to target anything that they can opportunistically. Red fox have a long history of taking chickens, backyard chickens, and the best protection for people is to, who are raising chickens, is to try to keep them enclosed in a suitable enclosure, or minimally at least putting them in to their enclosure about an hour before sunset and not letting them out until about an hour after sunrise, avoiding those crepuscular times, you know, the morning and night times where red fox are most active.
How healthy, Chris, is our fox population in Vermont?
I think it's quite healthy. We don't typically track the population size, and quite often that's the first question I get. How many fox are there in the state? And that's a really difficult number to get at, and, you know, it costs prohibitive, in fact, to try to get at that number based on the work that would have to be done to get it. These populations, both red and gray, as well as many of the other fur bearers, vary so much both within the year as well as from year to year based on any number of factors such as environmental condition, available food sources, competition, disease. That's particularly important with respect to fox. And so we don't really track the population size per se, but we actually track trends in harvest data for the species. We track trends in habitat indices, looking at the landscape and what it can hold or support for these animals. And probably most importantly of late, we've been tracking and have tracked all along the overall health of the population with respect to disease outbreaks. And we know with fox, they are susceptible to a number of diseases.
And right now, I understand you're a little bit worried about an outbreak of illness in foxes in Washington County.
That's correct. Toward the end of last week, there were, I believe, up to 10 reports of sick gray fox, actually in the Barrie area. And several of those have been sent to the Department of Health lab for rabies testing. At least one result has come back that it was negative. It's not rabies. New Hampshire, coincidentally, has had a similar occurrence in Haverhill, New Hampshire, just to, 30 miles or so on the other side of the Connecticut River, where they've also done some testing, and they've confirmed at this point at least one individual with the canine distemper virus, which is it's related to the measles virus, although it's not known to infect humans at this time. So this is a virus specific to the carnivores, and it actually infects many, many carnivores, all of the canines, felines. Here in Vermont, raccoon and skunk are particularly susceptible. It's even been documented in some sea mammals, marine mammals, bear in Pennsylvania. So the list goes on at what the canine distemper virus can infect. And although we have not been able to confirm that's what this is in the Barrie area, that's what we believe it to be based on the clinical signs at this point. So we are actively looking to get some samples and to confirm what this is.
So are you concerned at this point about the fox population, or is this just an ebb and flow that we should anticipate is pretty normal?
It's certainly the latter. I mean, this is the ebb and flow. We were always concerned about these events, but this has been the case with fox through time for quite some time here in Vermont, both with rabies and with distemper. This is not the first time. And the populations do recover because, again, it's density dependent. So once the population of the foxes has dropped, the transmission from individual to individual slows up or ceases altogether, and then the population builds itself back up. It's important to note that people who see sick animals should alert the department, or they could also alert the USDA Wildlife Services by calling the rabies hotline. And that's 1-800-4-RABIES, spelled out R-A-B-I-E-S. And that way our law enforcement staff can get out there and collect the carcasses or to handle the situation as necessary and to get the testing done that needs to be done. People should not approach these animals, even though we don't believe there to be any risk with canine distemper virus in people. We don't know that that's what this is, and people should never approach these animals and expose themselves to the possible pathogens. This recent outbreak is a stark reminder of the importance for people to vaccinate their pets.
Because it can be transferred from
Absolutely.
A fox to your dog.
Absolutely. And your cats and dogs. Even though it's called canine distemper virus, it can infect cats as well. So people need to get their pets properly vaccinated. And veterinarians should also know that this outbreak is occurring so they can be on the lookout for potentially infected domestic pets.
Chris Bernier is fur bearer project leader for Vermont Fish and Wildlife. And by the way, we have a link to a YouTube video of a fox calling up on the Vermont Edition Facebook page if you're curious about what that screaming lady sound might be like. Presidential primaries will keep coming fast and furious almost every Tuesday and Saturday now. And this week's voting in Michigan delivered a surprise in the Democratic race, with Bernie Sanders proving the polls wrong and winning that state by a narrow margin. Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll check in on the race between Sanders and Hillary Clinton, a contest that's expected to go all the way through the final voting in June. Join us for that discussion tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen, with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.